I'm a digital nomad and I travel around the world and I don't pay a single dollar for accommodation. Like, how does she do it? Why? What do you mean you don't pay? And that was one of the first questions I asked you, because you had this hook of going places as a digital nomad and getting free accommodation that's equal or higher quality than an Airbnb. And the answer you gave me did blow my mind.
I would just say, like, I will not pay accommodation from here, from now till August. Like, I already have everything booked.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Remotely Serious. If you're tuning in, this might be the first time you're seeing it this way. For many of you, it will be the first time for you seeing it this way. And I do mean seeing it, because in 2023, what we're calling season one, the nice block of episodes that we had in 2023, although we did sometimes record on video, it was mostly distributed as an audio podcast. So this one with my guest, who I will introduce in just one moment, is officially our first intentional video podcast, where we're going to be doing a lot more video in 2024. So I won't dwell on that, but remember, you know, you've heard it before. You can like and subscribe. We're going to be doing more video. You're going to be seeing more of us, and you're going to be seeing more of me, your host, Curtis Duggan. And I'm here with Laura Lavgo, who is a digital nomad and has some interesting twists and interesting ideas on being a digital nomad. Laura, welcome to the podcast. I'm excited to talk to you about some interesting concepts after we got connected in the last few weeks.
Thank you so much for inviting me to this first video cast. I'm super excited. I feel that what you're sharing already with Remotely Serious, it's super important for the community. So it's such a pleasure being here.
And Laura, if I can ask the dreaded typical nomad question, where are you calling in from? Where are you right now?
Currently, I am in Mexico City. It's not going to last that long. I'm living in April, but yeah, here we are from this part of the world right now.
I'm trying to remember the first time I heard about it as a nomad destination. It's somewhere I've never been. One of the last conversations that we've had on this podcast, one of the conversations we had about Mexico City, maybe the only one, maybe we've mentioned it more than once, but it was a community manager at a co-working space called Yayem, which I know in the Lisbon area in Cascais, but the other location is in Mexico City. And I've just been hearing more and more about Mexico City. It's interesting because often the big cities are not the nomad destinations. You don't hear about New York, London, Paris as nomad destinations. You hear about smaller towns on the beach and places, you know, little surf towns in Costa Rica and Portugal and Croatia. What's it like being a digital nomad in Mexico City? And some of our listeners might already have noticed, but you have a wonderful Hispanic or Spanish accent, if I can use the right term, Latina accent. There's so many words. I don't know if I'm using the right one. But you're not an Anglo. What's it like living in Mexico City? And what's it like being a nomad, you know, bilingual and sort of living in Mexico as a digital nomad, but not as someone who's coming from somewhere else and doesn't speak Spanish? You speak Spanish.
Yeah. Well, actually, it's funny because I think I know that girl. Her name is Regina. Or Renata, I feel.
Because I know Renata, yeah.
Ren,
yeah.
You recorded one with her. Well, actually, I'm from here, Mexico City, and I live here most of my life. But it's weird now coming here as a digital nomad, you know, because here, this used to be like my parents' house and everything. And now coming as a nomad, you get to experience it from way different angles. And as you mentioned, usually the main cities are not super popular, but I would say that some of them actually are, like Bangkok. It's really famous also for digital nomads.
That is true.
Kuala Lumpur, you know, so it's kind of like how, yeah, it's more about the diversity that the city has to offer. So I feel here we have tons of diversity. And yeah, actually, I feel that the experience, by me speaking Spanish, it's actually deeper here and in any country in Latin America where they speak Spanish. But it's also true that even with English, you can really go inside the community and get to know, like, at least Mexicans, they love listening to someone that is speaking like 3 pesos of Spanish, you know? So I would say that, yeah, my experience is deeper. And also because I'm already from here, but either way, Mexico City has a lot to offer for nomads as well.
When did you first start being a digital nomad?
I think I don't have like one specific moment when I said like, I'm going to do it, because I started traveling before with Congress. What I wanted to do is travel around the world. So I managed the way to get sponsorship to attend different fellowships around the world. So for that, it was like, okay, I'm going to go. And then in that same way, I started traveling a bit around and then coming back. But when I really took the decision and really went for longer, it was 3 years ago, a bit more, almost four. When I said like, okay, I have a remote job. This is my time to just start traveling around. And it was just coming back 1 month every now and then, you know, like for the home food, the more home food. And yeah, I've been going out, just having that kind of stuff. But I feel that my story also, it's a back and forth, because I started being a nomad. And actually I took like one full step back of settling down as I never did before, and then that brought me back again into being a nomad, but with a different focus. That is actually what I'm right now focusing on.
Your LinkedIn says slowmad as one of your biographical nouns: project manager, generalist, slowmad. Yes. And I think people are proud to be slowmads now. Are you proud of the slowmad label or moniker?
Yeah, I think that. It's something that actually is really connected with me. That's why even passing that to my professional side, it was a bit complicated, you know, because it's literally my lifestyle. But I've realized that it's a trend that is going to come help a lot of doing a lot of things, especially for the people that still want to travel. They want to do it in a more slow and deeper way. And also for those that want to start doing it, you know, like I felt that with the pandemic, a lot of people started working remotely and they were out there. But as everything that happens, the more diversity you have, the more people you have, from there you start having subgroups. And there's a lot of people that they say like, you know, I'm not like, I'm digital nomad, but that doesn't mean that I'm going to be partying till 3 a.m. or that I'm not committed, or that I'm just going to be like, you know, drinking margaritas. It's good that people want to do it, but I think that there's also that sweet spot of people focusing on projects, people kind of doing it in a more stable way and still traveling. So I feel that's why I put it like proudly there, my LinkedIn. Like it can happen as well like that.
Yeah, I'm just, I noticed that you had podcast producer. Actually, a side note, just for our listeners, this is our first video podcast. Normally, when I do the audio podcast, I'll have certain guest notes. I'll bring up their biography. I've done some research, got some questions to ask. And I'm realizing now, like, hey, I'm on video. My eyes can't wander while I look at a note, or people will notice. So I'm just getting over that self-consciousness. But on that note, I was just looking, you know, not at you, but over at my note. I was looking at that I think it's ongoing, but it says podcast producer. And you actually were doing this in Riverside. This podcast brought to you by Riverside, not a sponsor yet, but I used StreamYard before. So I'm curious about your background in podcast producing, or if it's ongoing, and you know, what podcasts you listen to, because you were quick to volunteer to jump on this podcast, even though we don't know each other that well. So it seems like you're comfortable on a podcast, and I was just curious about that.
Well, I actually started the podcast because I'm that kind of person that I'm doing something, doing the dishes, and I love like learning at the same time. And I feel that there's so many stories out there that with the podcast, we get to have them just in the one tap away. And while I was traveling around the world, I started to meet a lot of women around the world that they had same story, so many similar stuff with me, and we were from another side, you know, so breaking those stigmas and same time passing those stories, just broadcasting them. I feel that podcasting is such an amazing way to do it. And I said like, okay, you know what? Let me just start learning how to record, how to put a podcast. And then I started gathering stories of other women that for me were inspiring. And then my same people, they were like, oh, no way, that girl from the other side of the world is thinking exactly. So it bring us together with the same part of storytelling. So I actually paused it because I have so many projects going on, but I'm going to actually go back to it to start doing it. But yeah, as a podcast producer, I also helped my husband to start his, that now it's more successful than mine. So I feel that podcast is just really, it hits a personal note for me. And I love listening to the ones that are most about self-improvement and stories. There's also another friend that she's also doing podcasts. She invited me to hers. So I feel that it's just a way to fully be honest without maybe making it an audiobook. at the same time not greeting. So it's a good way to feel enclosed, you know, like if you're drinking that coffee with that person and then the host is just like making the conversation happen. So you feel always close to whoever is passing the knowledge or the experiences through a podcast.
It sounds like we got at least one or two or more shows that we can put in the show notes to reference. If you've got ongoing shows and podcasts, we'll make sure to put those in the show notes. Now, I feel like I'll probably have to edit this a bit, or maybe we're going to make this next part the cold open, because I feel like I've done a bad job as a host, because there's actually like a really huge hook into introducing you, and we've been talking for several minutes and we haven't gotten to it yet. So that's nice. We've had some small talk, but I feel like when I first got connected with you, there was a massive hook into what you're up to, and it kind of goes correct me if I'm wrong, but it kind of goes something like this. It's like, by the way, you know, if you were on TikTok, it's like, I'm a digital nomad and I travel around the world and I don't pay a single dollar for accommodation. Like, how does she do it? Why? What do you mean you don't pay? And that was one of the first questions I asked you, because you had this hook of going places as a digital nomad and getting free accommodation that's equal or higher quality than an Airbnb. And the answer you gave me did blow my mind. So I'm curious where you're at. I know you might be working on some info products on that front, but did you want to follow on that hook and introduce the concept of how you travel around as a digital nomad and what? Don't pay for accommodation? How does that work?
Yeah, I think that the main thing before saying it is like we need to be really open-minded, you know, because when I tell people, they're like, no, you know, like, you're lying to me. But it's true that these models, they work and they're outside.
That's why it's a good hook. That's why it's a good hook. It's because people are like, this can't be true.
And I would just say, like, I will not pay accommodation from now till August. Like, I already have everything booked and I'm going to be around the world. And as you mentioned, sometimes even better than Airbnb. So I am a pet sitter. And what happens is I take care of houses and pets for free in exchange of accommodation. People, when they're traveling around the world, they say, like, hey, I'm going to go get married. Can you take care of them? And then they open the doors of their house and their animals, because it's always better for them to have the animal in the same environment, in the same place, not in a cage, in a hotel that they don't know how they're going to treat them. And they're going to be stressed or something. And then that's where I come. That's where I say, okay, no problem. Tell me how's the routine, what you do, how you do it, what time they get fed. And then from there, I get free accommodation around the world. A lot of people, the moment I say, like, I don't pay for accommodation, they're like, oh, you're an influencer. I'm still working on my brand, but I can get to do this for free because I understood the system of what they're looking for, the pet owners, and what skills do I need to be doing that. And as you mentioned, like, I'm working on my ebook that is going to come soon, because I really believe that any person could be doing this. Of course, it requires some skills that are important, but it's something that it's growing more and more around the world. And I feel that our generation, we're not going to have a lot of kids. We're going to have pets and we're going to treat them as kids. So it's a really good way and system.
I do think that's already happening. And nations are dealing with demographic decline, but we do certainly have a lot of pets to make up for it. So you told me about this pet sitting concept, and now you're telling it to me again on this podcast, which will go public. And you're making an info product, an ebook, and possibly some content about how you're doing it. So I can conclude you're not afraid that if the word gets out, you'll have lots of competition or the quality will degrade. What this could be something that's like your lifestyle secret that just lets you live an interesting and cost-saving life by being a pet sitter. When did you choose to kind of, I don't know, go public with it or start talking about it more publicly? I imagine you did it for a while and it was like, this is cool, but this is my little secret.
I think there's room for everyone. Like, there's even sometimes that they come with me and they're like, hey, can you please? And I'm like, sorry, I'm fully booked already, you know? So I feel that it's going to keep increasing. So the more actually we talk about, a lot of people, they will be like, wait, can I do that? You know, so the more I talk, whether that person is going to become a pet sitter or is going to become a pet owner that joins the system. So I feel that I'm not jealous about that kind of stuff, because it's going to even like be growing. But what I want to actually promote is, and that's why actually the ebook is for, because it's, if I'm being one, I want that this profession or this lifestyle is not passing bad experiences, because I've heard like in many forums, like, oh, this happened to me, and because of that, I'm never going to hire again a pet sitter, you know? So the more we do it informed in a really good way, in a professional part that I don't charge. And they even sometimes say like, why you do it so professional? You know, so it's about how we get to do it in a careful way so this stays long-term. So I will actually promote it more in the way of, let's jump into this, because more people will be informed that this works and there's people that you can rely on. But let's do it also in a professional and informed and skilled way. So
can you walk me through, I don't know, maybe they're not typical, but if there was a typical engagement, I don't even know the right word, typical contract, whatever you call it, for pet sitting, do you meet the people in person, or is it something, is it more like an Airbnb where you show up and they've left the notes, they've left the food in the dish and all the instructions, you know, they've emailed you certain important information? How often do you meet the owners? How comfortable do they need to get with you before they say yes to trusting you with their precious dog or precious cat or precious other pet?
Well, I think that it's really variable, because some of them, they say like, I prefer someone that is already in the country that I can meet you. We usually do most of the time the handover like one day. We arrive one day before they leave. But before that, let's go all the way back. So we put our proposal, our skills, how we can contribute. And then we did in both in platforms that you already sign up for, and you put that, and in that way you're kind of like insured. But we also did through Facebook. Even like the second one we got, it was through Facebook, and we were like, are you sure you really want to trust us? Because I do it with my husband, right? So we were like, mm-hmm. We just put a post on Facebook, and people really trust you like that blindly, because you transmit with that energy. So we have a video call, that person explains us, they take time to take the decision, like, yeah, you're the perfect match or not. And then after that, it comes a welcome guide. Sometimes they already have a welcome guide, and if not, what we have built so far is a form of all the stuff. Actually, we're going to be also putting that stuff out for pet parents, because sometimes they say like, it's too easy, you just give them food, you know? And suddenly it's like, no, wait. But also, if this happens, you will do like that. The pet shouldn't go there. You need to be careful about this. If something happens, this is a vet contact, you know? So we already know which information is crucial, that sometimes pet parents, they might be like, well, what should I pass you? So we exchange that welcome guide, we read it, we check most of the definition, we also ask for information, like just in case, how they react, what we should do. We try to adapt the most we can, and then if it's possible, we meet in person before they take the decision, once we are ready in that place. If we're not, sometimes they just are like, no problem, just arrive one day before. And there's even occasions in which they give us the keys, or they left the keys with the entrance guard, and then we take it from there, and then when we're gonna leave, we just leave them there. We didn't even meet the pet parents in person. So it's really variable. I think the common thing is the trust and how professional you get to be. But there's people in Japan that they already told us to stay 2 months, and we haven't met in person at all.
Has anyone ever paid you, or is it always a barter or in-kind accommodation for pet sitting?
You can also do it paid. But it depends on which country you're doing it, which platform you're using. There are certain platforms that they say you cannot have any money exchange. But what I say is, they didn't pay us with money. But for example, one time that we did one pet sitting for 3 puppies, one of them had a surgery like 1 week before we arrived. So we literally had a puppy, 13 years old, super old, not wanting to eat, not wanting to drink water. I felt that we were going to lose her. And even the vet said, like, the owner knows this. So she knows that maybe when she comes back 1 month later, the puppy's not going to be here. And then we literally save the puppy.
That's not funny, but that's actually surprising that they, I would say, put that much trust in you. I'm not surprised, of course. You seem like an impeccable, trustable person. But that's more dramatic than I thought a pet owner would be, in terms of being willing to kind of trust you with that situation. So this is opening my mind to what is possible. Maybe like the same way that people didn't believe that you could do Airbnbs 20 years ago or 15 years ago. And then it's like, no, actually, people are willing to stay in strangers' houses. And I'm learning people are willing to trust their pets with a pet sitter, even in certain situations like that.
Yeah. And for example, now that you're talking about Airbnb, for people who were mind-blowing that idea. And now another way of also doing this is home exchange. That they do home exchange even in Facebook groups, you know, and you would see like, what do you mean that I will do people are doing it. I don't do it because I don't have a house, right? I still don't know one. But yeah. Those kind of systems, that is like, that cannot be true. But yeah, after this thing, she actually didn't want to sleep the puppy, but because of that time, she was already like booked the flights and everything. She was having not a congress, but she was being sponsored to record. And she was a master diver. And she said, like, you know what, guys, I don't know how to pay you. What I can do is I have a master diver's school. Let me pay the certification for you. So if she would have paid us per night, it would have been way less than the money that she saved us just by inviting us, like by sponsoring our certification for open water divers. So that's the kind of stuff that I used to say, that it's not always money. It could be a lot of exchange. This barter, you can see here that English is not my first language, but that it could happen like that beyond money. There's also people that is like, use my car, use my, what was, we need to cancel that one. But there was one in Joaquin that she said, like, I have a pickup and I have a motorbike, like, you can use it. And we were like, I think I don't want to use it, but thank you. You know, so it goes beyond only like that exchange. But it's true that there are certain platforms that people can subscribe and they get paid. So it's
I have one question I feel like I have to ask. You mentioned one dog who had surgery right before you took over. Have you ever been in a situation, you know, like, God forbid, nothing bad would ever happen, like really bad would ever happen, although I guess it could, but have you ever been in a situation where you needed to exercise something above and beyond just daily care, like a pet throwing up or exhibiting some kind of having a cold, where you needed to go to the vet to do something? Or have you been sort of, you know, quote unquote, lucky so far? Have you ever been in a situation where your responsibility escalates, as it sometimes does when you're taking care of an animal?
This is the moment that I bring my, I hope that they're watching the video, because this is the moment in which, you know, like when they open the paper, it goes on the way. Yeah. I think it has been counting times that Betsy is super easy. It always involves responsibility. Mm-hmm. And that's why also I want to talk about it, not in a romantic way, because a lot of people listen like, oh, I stay for free. No, you need to be you need to be caring after one human being that can get sick, that can have stress, that anything can happen. That one was one that we needed to take care of her every day, removing the shirt, because if not, she was leaking. She was like draining still from the surgery. And then one of those puppies as well, he was having anxiety when it was when there was thunderstorm. No way. I needed to do research to see how I could calm him down. I even found, and I created a playlist for like specific music that they made research that the puppies get calmed down. And I realized that it was working, because the other puppy, when I play that music, he used to come and stay there. You know, he really enjoyed it as well. So, and there was another one that also had wounds, and we got it from another pet sitter. So we didn't got, we had the handover from the other pet sitter, and the other pet sitter didn't take care of him at all for 1 week. So when we received him, he already had like open wounds and everything. So we needed to take him to the vet, we needed to administer medication, we needed to do lips in the wounds. So it has been countless times. There was also another one that he was reactive. So the dog never, he came from a shelter. So there was another, there were two. One was super happy, super chill, used to come with us. And then the other one was that reactive, that at night he used to come and smash the door of a room. And we were like, no way, someone broke in the house. And it was just the dog getting super reactive, super aggressive. So that kind of thing is also how you, and that's why I say that it's also needed the skills, because you need to know how to react, how to make the best situation for both of them. And we literally had to tell the owner in that moment, like, you know what, it's not about us, we can stay here, no problem. But the thing is, that dog is having more stress than us, you know. So it's the good time of you coming back, because you never trained him, you never accustomed him to anything. So he was having a bad time. So I think it's a lot of things about how to react. I was a foster home during the pandemic for a long time. So what happened is, from there, I learned how to administer medication, how to react, you know. So those skills, at a certain point, we might think like, oh, where should I start? Sometimes it's like, just, if you're now at your home and you want to start doing pet sitting around the world, I would say you can, if you have the possibility, start being a foster home. And then later you give them into adoption. But that process of seeing how they get better, that, at least for me, that was super well for skills and to know how to react. Because it's true that, I mean, it's like a human being, you know, you never know how they can get sick or anything. So there have been times in which I said like, oh, but it's about continuing and having perfect communication with the owner as well.
Yeah, this is where you're really getting into kind of, it's not the gotcha, but it is the flip side of the headline. The saucy headline is travel around the world and stay for free, have free accommodation as a digital nomad. How is this possible? And what you're getting at is that it's not just by saying, yeah, yeah, you've got a animal, but really embracing and being very good at the role of pet sitter and taking it seriously, taking it professionally is probably the right word, and doing all the things that need to be done and going above and beyond. And that's what's probably going to allow someone to travel around the world and have free accommodation. Whereas someone who doesn't take it seriously, they might not find themselves with a good reputation, you know, after the few times if they're not a good pet sitter.
Yeah, I think it's for free, but also involved responsibility. You know, yeah. Like just maybe as people that they might be doing a deal with a hotel, it didn't come for free. They also did like this work of building their personal brand. This is more open, I feel, for any person that they want to do it, as long as they're willing to take the responsibility and having the right skills as well. So it's easier way, like it's more accessible, but same time, still involves a lot of things. So it's kind of like what you get to choose. There's also the skill swapping, the system that you can do it like by offering 5 hours of your time for a certain thing, right? And then you get free accommodation, free, I don't know, breakfast. But those have also their non-negotiables or other stuff that you will be losing or sacrificing. So it's a bit of showing their real side instead of just saying like, oh, I travel around the world and for free, right? It has so many things also involved.
So where have you been in the last year or so? And which country or city is your favorite that you've pet sit in and also just lived your life in recently?
That's always the hard question. Like, which one is your favorite? Specifically, because right now I'm in Mexico. So if I don't say Mexico, that's going to be problematic. But I would say that, the last year I was in Turkey, Albania, Thailand, Japan, Malaysia, Singapore, and Mexico. And I loved Thailand, honestly. We're going to go back there. It's super nice. Turkey, I also love Turkey as well, and Mexico. So I would say that that's my top three. And yeah, Japan is also good, but I didn't stay for that long.
So where was it in, was it the beach? Where was it in Thailand and in Turkey that you stayed? It was, you know, there's the classic places like Antalya, Koh Phangan, Koh Samui that we've heard about for 10 or 15 years. But where did you stay in those countries that made you love it or put it up top for your best places?
I used to live actually in Italian, but that was more as a settler when I met my partner. But mainly I was in Istanbul this year, and Thailand, Koh Tao, it's amazing. I think it's the island that is super underrated compared with Koh Samui, Koh Phangan, and Chiang Mai. Also Chiang Mai, wow, it really blew my mind. They don't have beach, but the area is amazing. Actually, for digital nomads, it's so good. I know that a lot of people that they're already there, they will tell me like, no, don't say it, because a lot of people are going there. But it's truly magical there as well. And Mexico will. Mexico City.
I think some nomads and travelers have the stereotypical impression, which may be true, but I want to confirm it with you, that in Thailand, you know, for a few baht, a few dollars, you can order street food every day that's fresh and healthy and live very cheaply without sacrificing and eating a lot of fast food or something, that you can get fresh, healthy food. Is that true? Is that how you live your life in Thailand? Or do you find yourself buying groceries and cooking in Thailand too?
Actually, it's even more expensive to buy groceries and cook instead of just eating, and not even street food, you know, like in these kind of like places where the same woman that cooks for her family, she cooks for you. So it's not a main restaurant, but also it's not like street. Mm-hmm. No way. I loved Tom Yam. I swear, like we ate like 4 times per week Tom Yam.
Yeah.
It was super good.
What is Tom Yam?
It has ginger.
For people that don't know.
It's like, so the most famous one is cow soy. But basically it's like soup that is mixed with noodles, and they can have shrimp or chicken. It also has ginger, lemongrass. It has coconut milk. It has tomato. No, wait, I swear it's like a soup of many things, super nutritious. And with ramen, no way. Like, I felt that I was in paradise. It's really good. And the good thing about Thai people is they eat a lot of vegetables and a lot of water in the same food. So, yeah. Sometimes I used to have dinner for 25 Mexican pesos. So,
That sounds good. I don't know the current exchange rate, but that sounds good. And Chiang Mai, is it high elevation? I've never been. And so I'm just trying to, is it up higher?
Yeah, it's also close to Gurbath.
I see. So you might get some of that feeling of the Burmese mountain landscapes as opposed to the tropical beach of the Koh Islands.
Yeah. Actually, I feel Thailand, since it's so big, you get to experience way different cultures. That one is more like the Lana culture. So it's really close to that area compared with that if you go Phuket or if you go the islands. So I feel that still has a lot of the local culture immersed in the same way of living every day.
And what's Antalya like?
It's basically the Cancun in Turkey.
Yeah, is it?
It has a beach.
That's not what I was expecting. I didn't ask the question expecting that answer. I was picturing something that was more like a quiet. I know I've been to a Greek island and I know it's close by, but it's Turkish culture, so I was picturing more something else, but I wasn't picturing Cancun. So does that mean that there's a lot of partying? In what way is it like Cancun?
Like Cancun specifically, when we went out almost 1 year ago, it was because of the war with Russia, there were so many people flying. So now it's literally like a little Russia. A lot of Russians, they already love that place for vacation, but now they flew there. So even, you know, like in the mall where you have like level one, we need level two kids. First it was Turkish and then Turkish and English, and now Turkish, English and Russian in the malls. So you can from that understand how much the people there are mainly Russian now. So it's more touristic than actually like the real culture of Turkey. I've been to other places. My husband actually is Turkish. So Bursa, for example, still has a lot of stuff that is Turkish culture, the Ottoman Empire, the history. And Antalya, I feel that is not that much anymore. Yeah. But it's really nice. It has good beach.
Yeah, well, that's good intelligence that it's a bit more of an expat community and there's other places in Turkey. Is there anywhere else in Turkey you'd recommend as the top underrated or still local Turkish nomad destination?
I think, for example, Turkey is not that nomad yet because they haven't adapted. And that's also the stuff that I talk when I say about slomady. Nomads are expecting already co-working co-ops, you know, like fast internet, really cheap hostels and everything. So there's many cultures that they haven't done that yet. So they are not called already like the digital nomad city. But you can go and you be a nomad there. But of course, that will challenge you to be more inside the culture, inside the real community that they're already there. So that's why I feel that they don't feel that. But I would say that Bursa, it's amazing. Izmir as well. It's really nice. It's modern, same time it's like Turkey still. There's a Panjan as well, and Fethiye. And I don't know, like where you go, Cappadocia, that place is, it's touristic, but also has a lot of culture there. So I will definitely recommend this.
And if someone says, I love big cities, I love Bangkok, I love New York, I love Kuala Lumpur, and they get ready and they say, I am going to do a 3-month or a 6-month slow mad stint in Istanbul, the big city. Good idea or bad idea? What should they be ready for? What should they expect if they've decided they're going to stay in the big city?
I think as always, the big cities are going to have a lot of movement, and they're even good for people that they want to do it long term, because it won't be like the shock, you know, like, this is so strange or so different or so deep in this culture that it's taking me time and effort to adapt. So I would say that 6 months, 3 months in a big city is perfect. But of course, you also need to know that it's going to be a bit more pricey. It's going to be a bit more crowded, maybe. But Istanbul for slumbery would be perfect. I would just maybe recommend that not about the time or the place that you choose, but also the energy that you come to. There's many people that they know that I travel for so long and they're like, oh, I also want to travel to escape from these, to find myself. And I would say that traveling doesn't do that, but it's also true that you come, you taking your luggage, whatever you didn't work with or didn't work on about your life, and also what you did. So when people use traveling as a way of escaping, that's why traveling gets like that feeling of escape is not enough to what I was expecting. Yeah, because you already came with expectations. You already came with this thing of, I want everything super comfortable, knowing that you're going to go to a place that you are not from there, that you have never heard of, that people have different cultures. So I think I would say more the open-minded feature, the respectful, and also wanting to go a bit beyond just the superficial part or the comfortable one. So you can really have a rich experience, and those 6 months or those 3 months that you experience it, they will really have a completely different taste than just, oh, I'm changing location, but I'm having always the same experience everywhere.
What are you working on right now, or what are your goals for 2024? I know we mentioned that you're producing and helping with some podcasts, but what are you working on right now, or in terms of income, and do you consider yourself an entrepreneur, a freelancer, employee? How's that work for you?
Well, so far I was still an employee. This is my last week actually working as a employee for a company. I was kind of like like insider, if we say like that. I was freelance, mm-hmm. but I was like full-time, part-time, let's say, with one company, like providing the services, not on project, but always there, right? And I said, like, thank you. I got an investor for actually both my personal brand and my new project called Slow Money. So let's say that now starting in 2 days, I'm going to be a full-time entrepreneur, because that's exactly what I want. So I've been traveling around the world, and I found that Slow Money is the way I live by it, and also the perfect sweet spot between moving around at the same time doing responsibly. So I'm going to be focusing on putting both, like from courses, ebooks, like pet sitting, and other ways to do it, the tools database for people to find it, you know, that I know, and I've literally lived them or used them for so many years, but sharing that with other people to help them jump into this lifestyle in a more conscious way. Because I also feel that this connotation that sometimes digital nomads have, that is like they come here and they do a lot of damage and they gentrify the place, specifically Mexico City. There's areas in which a local cannot go and rent a place because they're super expensive. You know, so that kind of movement is going to happen. But the more we do it in a conscious way, I want that, and I believe that at certain point we can be saying people that are traveling are bringing better things that if we would be on our own, you know? So I want to promote this movement.
Yeah, this is great. I love everything you're saying. And I want to talk more about slow matting, but what did you say about your personal brand? Did you say you're going to invest in your personal brand, or did you say you got an investor for your personal brand?
I got an investor. So what I was doing, well, I was working for other people. I was building my personal brand by sharing stuff on LinkedIn. And I actually happened to become first a community top voice. And now I'm LinkedIn blue badge top voice. And I've been like people inviting me to congresses, to podcasts, to speaking at events. So people said, like, you know what? I see where you're going. Literally, they told me, like, I prefer investing on you right now than later when you become super expensive and I cannot afford it, you know? So it's kind of like people are willing, and that's also what the creator economy is going to bring, that people, instead of investing only on, oh, this thing brings me 15%, is more like, I'm going to invest in that person because I know where they're growing. So I believe that this thing of building your personal brand, it's super important, because at least in this case that I'm going to start something, they're not only coming because of the idea of slow modding, but same time because who's going to be behind that, which is going to be me. So that's why sometimes I also tell people, like, put yourself out there. That is something that we would be missing, because you never know who's watching.
So if someone invests in you, does that mean every time you monetize your YouTube channel or you sell an affiliate link to a pet sitting software platform or whatever you do, does that mean you got to send them 1% every week, or I know this is like a digital nomad and remote work show, but it's also kind of like a small business show, and we like to get into some of these details. So if you can share, like, even in general, how does that work for someone to invest in you? Because I think this is going to be part of the creator economy if it isn't already. And I'm just curious, I'm sure lots of people would be interested in in how that works?
I think it's kind of, for example, depends on how much you close a deal a month. Like if it's going to be super long term, mm-hmm. depends on how money also they give you. Even incubators, they do it like, you know, like I'm going to invest time and I'm going to help you. But then from there, I'm going to get this piece of the cake. If in this case, mm-hmm. as I mentioned, it is more about like how I'm going to be growing, then of course it could be, okay, from this part till this part, your investment is going to come back completely to you, or we're going to do this deal and I will be sharing with you whatever percentage I do from that moment onwards, you know? So it's kind of like how we get to close those deals. It could be many ways, you know? It could be, okay, you give me this money and after 12 months, kind of like if it's a credit from the bank, I will give it back to you, right? Or it could be, okay, you know what? This that you're giving me right now is going to be 1% of whatever I built in 5 years. If it turns out to be 1 million, 7 figures, they're going to get back, you know? So it's kind of like about how much you're willing to give based on the strategy you have, how much you want to grow. And if at certain point you say like, okay, this going to be back from you, but only for this part. If I start creating other stuff, that is for me, you know? So
yeah,
it's kind of finding the great deal that works for both sets.
And I know, so you were talking about this before I rewound us back to talk about investing in a personal brand, in your personal brand, so the slow matting business. You've mentioned an ebook to me, I think, if I've got that right. I'm sorry if we were already getting into this, but the slow matting concept, the second thing that you mentioned, what is that and where can we look for it? When are you releasing more information about slow matting and what is that enterprise going to be?
So I think everything is going to happen as an MVP. And this is kind of like a recommendation that I would give to another person that also wants to do this thing. That is like launch whatever you have right now. So as you said, mm-hmm. maybe it's going to be there. Maybe it's not going to be there yet. But what you will find definitely is content about this kind of stuff. I already have one LinkedIn page. From there is going to come one newsletter. I have already mm-hmm. certain databases that people can access to. And it's always that consultancy that I can give to people. Because what I believe is, each path, each rhythm is completely different. So I do this consultancy with people that is like, okay, let's jump in the call. Tell me what you're doing. What are your negotiables? What are your non-negotiables? And then I can start telling you which tools that I know can be working for you. And then from there, you can start doing. I'm also helping people to find cheap tickets. And I actually teach them how to do it themselves. So it's literally like learning tools instead of just me doing the work for them. So slow matting is going to be slowmath.ing because it actually comes as the birth of, I say, like mastering globetrotting, like moving around the world while contributing locally. So it's just that sweet spot. And I even say that it would be perfect for people that they're already sellers, that they want to start traveling around the world beyond only vacations 2 times per month, per year. And also for digital nomads that are already out there and they say, you know what, this speed, this saying goodbye every week, this unattachment to things, we want community, we want that closeness, that also works for them. So it's kind of like from both sides, this is the middle point that can help both people. So yeah, you can find it in Instagram, YouTube, a website, LinkedIn as slowmath.ing.
And just if I heard this right, are you saying that your ideal client or a client that's within the wheelhouse is both someone who hasn't traveled that much but might want to start slow matting? Let's just say it's someone who lives in the suburbs of Toronto. They've barely left their house except to go to Disney World and Florida and maybe Mexico a few times. And all of a sudden, a family wakes up and says, you know, the winters here in Toronto, we don't like them and the things are expensive and we'd like to actually go to Thailand for 6 months. There's that person. And then, of course, there's a digital nomad who's switching places every week and says, this is too crazy. The lifestyle is too crazy. I got to slow down. I got to get off the roller coaster. Are you helping both of those stereotypical clients?
Actually, this is the kind of stuff that I say that I believe in this project because it worked for me. As you mentioned, usually I feel that you describe my husband and you describe me. When I met him, I was traveling around the world, changing cities every 2 weeks because I wanted to eat the world. And he was that kind of person that he arrived on Italy to say, I'm going to live here. My house is going to be here. My kids are going to go to this school and I'm going to work here. You know, so he was super ready to settle down. And then we met, it was an explosion. It was like, We want completely different things, but we want to make this work. So how we find that little point that works for us? And actually, if I turn him into, as a settler, to a Sloma, and he really likes it, I know that this will work for them. And also for me, a lot of the pains that I have as a digital nomad, because let's not romanticize it. There's so many things, you know, that you cannot even unpack. You always feel like this. I was staying in hostels with other night people, and three of them snore at night. So kind of this thing works because I was that digital nomad and she was that settler. So we've met here in this point that makes us feel that connection, make friends, have community, explore places, you know, instead of just moving every 2 weeks. Now I say, like, I didn't explore many things from many places that I just had my stamp. I visited them, but sometimes it was like, I arrived one place, I don't even want to go out. Like, I need vacations of the vacations or of the lifestyle that I have. So yeah, I feel that this new proposal is going to come as a new proposal for people that they don't want this, they don't want this, but they want something in between.
Are there any new places in 2024 or 2025 that you want to go to for the first time?
Well, we're going to go Phuket. We've never been there. We're going to go Osaka. We've never been there. We're going to go Vietnam, Philippines, Indonesia. So I think those are going to be the main.
So you're not a slow mad yet. You still have some of the digital nomad in you. It's not like, maybe I should ask this. You're in Mexico City. Do you foresee for your life as a slomad that you will be in multiple places? Like, is it 6 months Mexico City, 6 months somewhere else, or 6 months Southeast Asia somewhere else? Like, what do you see in the future, the next couple of years as a slomad? How many bases?
Yeah, that, I think the key is bases. So, for example, what you were saying about this thing, I feel that you could be a slomad and still not spending 6 months, because that's the first question that people tell me. Like, how long should I stay in one place to be considered a slomad? And there is no rules yet. Nothing is written in stone. But I feel that the slomad lifestyle goes only beyond how long you stay in one place, but also how you live the experience there. So I already have like 3 months, 2 months in Phuket, 3 months in Japan, and then I'll still have like more time, you know, like for the rest of the year that I want to spend at least 1 month in each place. It depends, of course, on visa. It depends on the things that you want to do. And I feel that this thing, I don't know, I would be lying if I tell you right now if I'm going to stop. So let's not say this to my husband, but if we want to have kids at a certain point, of course, we need to kind of like stay for a bit in one place. Like, we need to settle down. But I also see, and we have friends that they travel with their babies. You know, like, that still happens there. So sometimes maybe it might not stop there. So yeah, we will have one here.
I've seen certain influencers or people that share their lives on social media that are digital nomads, the traveling different places, and the baby is 2, 4, 6, 8 months old. And they didn't just pause for 2 years. They kept going, which I guess is its own challenge. So it's possible. I mean, I feel like that is probably the one of the biggest barriers. Like, people are like, yeah, it's fine, be a digital nomad, but what if you have a relationship? Oh, we keep going. Okay, yes, but what if you have a kid? Okay, that's where most people would stop and say, then yes, we're not nomads, we stop. But there are some people that are still doing it. I don't know. That seems like the biggest challenge.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how you handle this, but the other one that comes up in the similar vein is like, what about healthcare? For people that are not familiar with the lifestyle, they're used to maybe having their eyeglass prescription or, you know, a chronic condition or their ear checkup or, you know, whatever it is that they do. And most people are, you know, very, whether they're Americans in America and they're really worried about their private insurance, or even they're just in other countries like Europe or Mexico, Canada, the UK, and they know that they have public health care or a mix of public and private health care. But it's like, well, I can only get health care in my own country. Has that ever bothered you, or how did you handle healthcare and even healthcare now as a couple?
So, for example, while I was working, I had my healthcare in Mexico, like for main things. So, of course, if anything happened, we needed to come back all the way to Mexico. But it's true that also there are already, like, since this has been a trend really famous, there are places, there are tools that they cover you wherever you are. Like, that international insurance works. And then in that way, you can have always like one doctor away that you can go and you can check it, you know. It's of course true that there are certain stuff that you already have your doctor. So what happens also is when we come back home or to our base, we do exams. Mm-hmm. We always take like this preventive, because that's also the thing that I say, like for jumping into this lifestyle, you get to do a lot of things before jumping into it. So we always have like the annual checkup for blood tests. Now that we came, we literally had it, you know. We don't feel bad and everything. We always supplement each other. We're all the time like having the right vaccines to wherever we go. For example, in Mexico, you don't need the yellow fever, but we take it. Why? Because in case we are in another place that we're not accustomed to. So I feel it's kind of like the mix of both finding the right tool. There are several ones. The ones that I know is Safety Wing. Mm-hmm. It's the most famous one. It's actually the one that I use, not sponsored. And in that way, in whatever you are, like as a nomadic person, you get forward. If it's, of course, beyond certain stuff, that's something else. I haven't lived it. I would be lying if I say how it works. But it's true that everything involves risk. So the more you prevent them, the better it's going to become. So taking care of your health before anything happens, it could be also a good way to have making sure that wherever you are, nothing happens.
Well, Laura, I'm really excited about the venture that you're launching and with Slow Matting and everything that's going to come from Slow Matting. And I guess I don't know how many people you've told, but it sounds like we also have this big news that you shared earlier in the podcast that you're moving on from being an employee. So it's an exciting time, and I'm excited that you were able to come on the podcast and talk about pet sitting and Slow Matting and your future plans during a week where it sounds like there's a lot of excitement going on in your life.
Thank you so much. I feel like it's a part of how you, in this same movement, you find stability, because many people, they like routine, and there's also ways of having routine but moving. So I feel that I encourage every person to try whatever that works for you, for them, in the rhythm that they want. So thank you so much for having me here to share it with you and with all your listeners.
Laura, it was a pleasure. And thanks everyone for another episode of Remotely Serious. And once again, this is very likely the first official video episode that we're doing. So as you know, that you can do in the world of YouTube and other places, you can like and subscribe as we move into the world of video. And thanks again, Laura. This was another episode of Remotely Serious. We're back. It's 2024. Thanks, everyone. Have a good one. Stay safe out there.